we're going to see more and more cyber criminals coming from different parts of the world. They're going to continue to improve their tactics and their techniques. They'll shift as they need to. They'll look at different ways of attacking the organization or attacking the person. So the new norm really is that you have to be vigilant.
This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, this is Jennifer Tribe, and you're listening to episode 59 of Frankly MSP, the podcast for managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. Well, the dust has finally settled after Frankly MSP Live in Santa Barbara a couple of weeks ago, and wow, if you missed it, you may have heard the chatter from the folks who were there about what an experience it was. The feedback we've had from people who were there has been nothing short of phenomenal. We heard things like, best content-focused event I've ever been to, blown away by the people here, you knocked it out of the park. Perhaps my favorite comment was, Frankly MSP Live? Let's be real, the hashtag should be Frankly MSP Love. We just might have to steal that one. For those of you who were there, you know what I'm talking about, and I appreciate you. I was so thrilled to meet many of you in person and to hear your feedback about how this podcast has helped you in your MSP business, because that's what it's all about. By the way, if you have a minute, I would really love if you could share some of your Frankly MSP feedback in a review on iTunes. If you do that, send me an email at franklymsp@ovic.com. That's franklymsp@ovic.com to let me know, and I'll mail you an awesome Frankly MSP t-shirt. All right, let's dig into our topic for today. Trend Micro's predictions for the major cybersecurity trends you and your clients will be grappling with this year. My guest is Trend Micro's Director of Global Threat Communications, John Clay, and we're going to be picking out some of the highlights of Trend Micro's new report called The New Normal.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by Ovic Networks.
Hi, John. Welcome to Frankly MSP.
Thanks, Jennifer. Glad to be here.
Trend Micro has put out their security predictions for 2020, and we're going to dig into those today. Security is obviously a topic that's on the minds of a lot of MSPs, so it will be interesting to take a look at what's potentially coming down the pike for MSPs and what they might be dealing with this year. So your report, I know, laid out a number of different predictions. I just want to go through maybe five or six of them in detail and talk about what they mean and how MSPs can protect themselves and their clients against them.
Sure. That sounds like a plan.
The first one I want to talk about is perhaps the least interesting, or the one that people think is very boring. It's patching. People, it seems, they're like, yeah, patching, kind of been there, done that. But you say there are still some major gaps and some things that MSPs can do better. So what's going to happen with patching in 2020?
The threat actors always go back to what works. And what has worked in the past and continues to work and will continue to work in the future is unsecure systems, meaning systems that have not been patched for even vulnerabilities that have been published and patched years ago. We hear a lot about zero-day exploits and the use of zero-day exploits in attacks, but the reality is those are very few and far between. The majority of the time, the threat actors are going to take a standard vulnerability that was patched last year, the year before, and utilize those in their attacks. Because even though you say people have done the patch thing, they still haven't. That's the challenge. Another issue, and we found this out with WannaCry, is a lot of organizations are kind of mandated to use older operating systems. For example, in the healthcare industry or in manufacturing, a lot of those systems and devices that are utilized in those places are running embedded operating systems and very old embedded operating systems. And one of the challenges they have is they can't patch it because there may be a contractual issue with the vendor who provides that device to say they can only touch it, they can only update it. So the customer, in this sense, doesn't have control over the patching of those devices. As such, in a lot of cases, they go unpatched. And that's what we saw with WannaCry, where you started seeing billboards out there being compromised and other areas of the network getting compromised. So patch management still is a critical aspect. You know, Microsoft, you have the patch Tuesdays all the time, and there are critical vulnerabilities that are regularly reported there that need to be looked at, need to be patched. And again, I go back that the threat actors, malicious actors out there will continue to utilize exploits of known vulnerabilities in their attacks.
Your report mentions virtual patching as a way that can cover some of these gaps. So what is virtual patching?
One of the challenges an organizations have is when they do get a patch from the vendor, they have to go through testing, they have to make sure it works, they have to deploy it then out to all of their different devices, their endpoints, and so forth. And that can be a cumbersome routine for them. What virtual patching allows you to do is essentially utilize a IPS, intrusion protection system, that can virtually patch, meaning there's a rule inside that can identify if an exploit is targeting that device, and it can block that exploit from running on said device. So it allows an organization to basically virtually patch that machine while they manage and maintain and test the full patch for those vulnerabilities from the vendor, and they can take their time to deploy it out there. The other thing that virtual patching, and probably a bigger component of what virtual patching does, is a lot of those rules support older operating systems that are unsupported by the vendor. For example, XP, a lot of the current exploits that come out are backward compatible to XP. And as I mentioned earlier, there's still a lot of XP running out there, especially, like I said, in embedded devices in some of the other countries of the world that may not have as progressive as, say, the US, for example. They're still running a lot of the older software. And so a virtual patch can help protect those as well, even knowing that there will never be a patch for those devices. Hence, a virtual patch can take it and manage and secure them from any exploits of those vulnerabilities.
Is virtual patching something an MSP could do at scale across a full client portfolio if they were using an IPS?
For sure. A IPS, it can be host-based, meaning there could be an IPS solution running on every single endpoint. You could have it at a gateway or at the edge of the organization, and they could manage it that. And they can manage all of those devices and all those points of entry with an IPS device.
What percentage of MSPs do you think are using virtual patching today?
Good question. I don't have any actual surveys or studies that have seen that, but the solution and IPS has been around for many, many years. So it should be part of anybody's security strategy and security portfolio should have IPS technology deployed. So I would hope that a lot of them utilize it and can help manage that process.
Let's talk about ransomware now. So ransomware, obviously a massive problem for MSPs in 2019. What does 2020 look like?
Yeah, ransomware, you know, that's a threat that just keeps on coming, unfortunately. And we did have a lull back in 2018, but in 2019, we really saw the ransomware actors kind of put the pedal to the metal. And one area that they definitely targeted were the MSP folks out there. And one of the reasons why they are doing that is because instead of having to go directly to each individual company, if they can compromise an MSP's architecture or infrastructure, they can then deploy the ransomware to all of their customers, which means it's a one-to-many versus a one-to-one process. MSPs are going to continue to see threat actors looking to compromise their own network and their own infrastructure.
Are there trends? Are we going to see different strains, different attack approaches, different targets in 2020?
Yes. And one of the things that we saw, a big shift in the ransomware actors, is kind of adopting almost a nation state model where you have one group that goes in and infects the actual network and compromises and get access to the network, but then they will sell access to the ransomware actors. And it could be Ryuk, it could be Soda Nakibi, could be any of the ransomware actors could then buy access to these networks that are compromised. And so, unfortunately, it's not going to be only one type of ransomware that's going to dominate in 2020. It's going to be all over the map. All of these ransomware actors are going to look for getting access to organizations. They're going to look for getting new customers that they can infect. So that's the unfortunate part.
You're listening to Frankly MSP.
Now, the next one we're going to talk about is one that I find so interesting.
deep fakes as the next frontier of fraud. So tell us about this.
This is still kind of a proof of concept, but with the ability for threat actors and malicious actors to utilize artificial intelligence and machine learning, we're starting to see these, what we call deep fakes, which is essentially using artificial intelligence to build, whether it is a voice only or a video of a person, and making it sound like them, even though it's not them. So it's not the person actually in the video, and it's not the person actually talking on the audio, but they actually utilize AI to mimic them, create their faces, create their voices. One of the things we talked about before is business email compromise, which is a threat that a lot of organizations are dealing with, where you get an email message into your financial team, and it's purporting to come from the CEO, the CFO, asking that person in the email to wire transfer money out to an account, the account being the criminal account. We think that with deepfakes, potentially what we're going to see, and we've actually seen one already where a fake voice enabled instructions came into an organization via a voicemail asking that person to wire transfer money. They did wire transfer the money. That's where we see the challenges. I think in the initial area, we'll see voice only, because it'll be more likely that you could utilize a voicemail scam inside an organization in a business versus a video. I don't think you'll start seeing managers videotaping themselves giving instructions for their employees to do. Not likely. If we're going to see video, it's more likely going to be around political issues, political campaigns. Or we could see, for example, deepfaking a CEO talking about issues with the organization that could affect their stock price, which would then the actors behind it could be looking to either short or long their stock and try and utilize social media to expand this deepfake video of the CEO saying something potentially either positive or negative about the organization.
This seems to me so dangerous. I know MSPs are already right now struggling to educate their clients about phishing emails and spear phishing emails and looking twice at every email from the CEO that asks you for something. Do you see this as a huge education lift in 2020? I mean, how do you start educating your clients that that voicemail that you just received, like not even looking now at emails, but that voicemail that you just received, you should look at that with suspicion?
But Jennifer, the beauty about this is there's an easy solution to this, which is two-factor verification. If organizations would put in two-factor verification for requests, obviously that does put a burden. It adds a little bit of time to every transaction or every request that comes in. But at least if you can verify through a separate medium, right? So if you get an email, pick up your phone and call the person who sends it asking to wire transfer $10,000. Or if you get a voicemail from somebody saying, hey, I need you to transfer $10,000 or $1 million to this account, you know, utilize a method to verify with that person that that transaction is legitimate. But again, that goes back to your point. Education, education, education. We need to educate our employees that this can happen, that not everything you see and hear is actually legitimate. There, unfortunately, now with the invention of deepfakes, there's going to be the ability of criminals to scam organizations in other ways than they have in the past.
With ransomware, I know a lot of smaller businesses were thinking, oh, I'm too small, they're not going to come after me. And that was a mistake, because ransomware can hit a business of any size. Deepfakes, do you think they're going to hit the SMBs, or are they going to start with the enterprise?
The one we already saw was more of a larger size organization. If you can blend into the organization, or an organization has a lot of transactions, this kind of blends into it. So, and the likelihood that there's that chain of group people, less likely in a larger organization, it might get lost in the shuffle, versus a smaller organization where you could probably just walk out to the next office and that's your boss. And he says, no, this is not true, right? So I think you'll see deepfakes utilized in larger organizations, especially as I mentioned before, public companies that could potentially see deepfakes of their CEO talking about their company and having that video go viral on social media through the ways that they can do that is more likely.
The next one that I want to talk about in the report was cyber criminals focusing on IoT devices in the workplace to spy and then extort companies. And the example given was a smart TV that's brought into the office, so maybe in the boardroom or something.
We have actually seen in the past the use of microphones and cameras and mobile devices, your mobile phones, for example, to turn those on remotely and spy on any conversations, any videos that could happen. A smart TV is simply a similar medium. It has a camera, it has a microphone, it can pick up sounds, it can pick up video. And unfortunately, everything is a computer these days. So the threat actors have the ability to compromise those types of devices as well. Likely what we will see are the actors looking for vulnerabilities in this code, right? And a lot of these are running on Linux or some, or an Android or some operating system that we know have known vulnerabilities in them, or they're looking for other methods to get into these devices. We have a product called Smart Home Network that runs across the world, and we see the threats going into homes regularly and what devices are being compromised. And even we're seeing threats coming out of the home and what devices are launching those attacks. And regularly we see smart TVs, we see cameras, we see DVRs, we see printers. So all of the devices that can run in a home, you could also start seeing deployed inside corporate networks and businesses. And unfortunately, you know, that adds an entirely new attack surface for the malicious actors out there to target and utilize. So it's going to be a problem. It's going to continue to be a problem, especially IoT. I talk about something called forever days. You know, I talked about a zero day before. And what I classify as a forever day is essentially a device that has a known vulnerability, but because it's an IoT device, the manufacturer is likely not ever going to patch it. He may have just built that device for a very short life cycle of the device. He contracted out the development of the software. Once the device is on the market, he doesn't need those developers anymore, so he drops that contract. Who's going to patch the device when a vulnerability is found? Likely nobody. So IoT is going to introduce a whole new realm of challenges for us as an industry.
Well, as you say, it's been known for a long time that a lot of these IoT devices aren't built with security in mind. They are fundamentally insecure. So what does an MSP do to protect their clients who have these devices in their workplaces?
Within an MSP, they can go in and, you know, I talk about a network IPS, right? Network IPS. That type of device can monitor the network traffic and identify if there is a exploit coming through the network, which is what's likely going to have to happen, because an IoT device is usually not going to be able to support an agent, a security agent running. There's just not enough real estate. There's not enough storage space to in memory to support security. So you have to build a wall around it, right? So what an MSP can do is look at, can we isolate? Can we segment that network? Can we put in an IPS device that can monitor the network traffic and block network traffic? Firewalls potentially can look at doing some things, some internal firewalls type of technology. We're also starting to see more IoT and industrial IoT developed products. So we have a couple of products already that can sit in the network or even plug into a USB port on the device and monitor traffic and monitor the device for compromise.
Do you see a trend? You know, it's been identified that IoT devices are a problem. The security of them is a problem. Do you see the industry moving towards making sure that these devices have security going forward? Or are people like manufacturers just not listening there?
Yes, I think there's going to be a combination of both public and private requirements. You're going to start seeing more legislation. For example, California passed a law that IoT devices had to deploy passwords, you know, the administrator password for the device. You had to change it upon installation and some things. So we're going to see both laws and regulations built out. But again, it's going to take a while for that to come to fruition, whether it's state regulations or state laws, or it's going to be federal. Hard to say. It's going to be a combination of both of those, like I said. The industry itself, I think we definitely need the manufacturers to start thinking about security in the entire device lifetime of that device. So if we can start getting them to realize that security is a key component to the success of their devices support out there. And that also has to do with the users of these devices, right? The users have to demand the manufacturer to start embedding security as well. So it's going to be a combination of all of those.
Now, related to this idea of bringing IoT and consumer grade devices into the workplace is this trend that you've pointed out in your report about attackers targeting employees through their home So in their home devices, and then using that as a gateway into the corporate network.
Yeah, again, the malicious actors are going to go after the low-hanging fruit and what's easier to compromise. And everybody is a consumer, right? When we all go home, we're consuming. We have our own home network, and we may be bringing work home with us. And so it's probably easier to compromise a home network than it is a corporate network. Home people, they may not understand it as well. They may not know about security. They're relying on manufacturers to do it. That also allows the malicious actors to pivot and to laterally move from that home network into the corporate network potentially. This is similar to a supply chain attack where instead of going after the big company, the malicious actors go to the suppliers of that company, which are usually small businesses. And so they'll compromise those small businesses who have a connection into that bigger corporate network. And they'll use that avenue to laterally move into the bigger network. So similar type of thing. It's just now they're looking at remote employees, giving them access to the bigger corporate network.
Do you think we'll ever see a day when the companies say, okay, you're an employee now of ABC company, and as an employee, you may not have a X brand of smart speaker, you may not have a Nest thermostat, you may not have a Ring doorbell, whatever it is?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get that far, Jennifer. What I do think you're going to start seeing is more and improved security in the pipe between the home and the corporate network. So they're going to build that better security from that perspective. The other piece you're going to start seeing is probably more rigorous controls around when remote employees come into the organization. You may see more segmented networks so that they only can access a certain part of the network and segregate it from the rest of the corporate until they can determine that that user's system is clean. So I think you'll see that. I don't really foresee organizations getting to that point where they're saying you have to buy certain devices inside your home. That's privacy and freedom is probably a bigger component.
Okay, pulling back to the higher level now and looking at trends overall. I mean, the name of your report is The New Norm. So what is the new norm for MSPs and IT managers in 2020?
What we're trying to portray is that these threat actors are going to continue to target organizations and businesses and MSPs alike. They aren't going away. We're going to see more and more cyber criminals coming from different parts of the world. They're going to continue to improve their tactics and their techniques. They'll shift as they need to. They'll look at different ways of attacking the organization or attacking the person. So the new norm really is that you have to be vigilant. You have to look at your security controls. You have to actually have the mentality that I'm probably already breached. I need to go and find that breach and close off that breach sooner than later, because it is a war against these cyber criminals and these threat actors out there. We, as a security industry, our job is to try and keep protections out there and do as best we can, but we never know what's coming next. As technology changes, the criminals adopt those just as much as we adopt them. And so they'll utilize the newer stuff, like we said, with deep fakes or artificial intelligence and some of those areas, you know, the industrial IoT and IoT devices that are making our lives easier to do, but it also opens up a whole new attack surface for those threat actors.
I'll put a link to the report in our show notes for today. Are there any other resources for MSPs who want to stay on top of the security trends as they develop?
Yeah, you know, on our website, we have a whole section called the intelligence area, and we regularly publish all of our reports there. We blog on a regular basis about the latest threats that are targeting customers out there and the world in general. We have videos. We have an MSP program, so they can contact us if they want to talk to us about security for them and their customers. We'd be happy to help them.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us today, John.
Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate it.
That was John Clay, Director of Global Threat Communications at Trend Micro. If you'd like to grab your own copy of the 2020 prediction report we've been discussing, it is free for downloading. You don't even need to give your name. I'll put links to the report and the other resources John mentions in today's show notes at avik.com/franklymsp/059. What are your thoughts on cybersecurity for 2020? Are you already seeing some of the threats we've talked about today in your client base? Drop us a line on the show notes and let us know what you're seeing. Again, that URL is avik.com/franklymsp/059. I'll also put links to a few of the videos from Frankly MSP Live if you want to relive the glory or see what you missed. That's a wrap. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avik Networks, the most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks.